Welcome back to Season 2 of the Jack Norris Podcast. We like to call it Jack Unmasked. Hockey stories from the 60s and 70s. Proudly brought to you by Ron Brown Implements. All your tractor, trailer, and tandem needs. Call Ron just north of Delisle at 306-834-7109. We hope you enjoy reminiscing about hockey as much as we do. So, without further ado, let's chat with Jack. Okay, we're back with the Jack Norris Podcast, Jack Unmasked. Jack, how are things going today?
Pretty good. Nice day, sunshine, good day for combining. I think it's going to get a good day in today.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, it's been a long grind for these guys.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if they could get a couple good weeks under their belt here.
Sounds like it's going to be nice next week. Supposed to get up, temperature's supposed to get up. We'll see. They've been wrong before.
We just give Glenn Hall a call while we were sitting here, and he said it feels like spring.
Yeah.
Coming around.
I know.
Which is so true, right?
But he's got it made up there. He's got a beautiful house, and he sits in that house and looks out the window and watches TV, reads a lot of books, and he's got a good life up there. He's doesn't expect much out of life, but he's easy going.
Well, we had a good visit with him there the other day, and actually he said he was just sitting there. He's got a nice little pond just kind of down the valley there from him, and he said he saw, what, 6 or 7 moose out there?
Yeah, and having a drink, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
it was popping out there. It was interesting.
I said, you should take movies of that. That's something to be proud of when you see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Blue jays flying around there by the bird feeder and a couple other things. So it was a nice little visit there. Big wolf in his living room.
Yeah, wasn't that something?
Yeah.
Wow. So, I wouldn't want to have him if he's alive.
That thing was bigger than I thought. I have never seen one. And after I saw that, I thought twice about Peter the Wolf, the little book I used to read when I was a kid there, and that wouldn't have been fun.
No.
But anyways, I found it quite interesting, and I didn't realize that when they think of Glenn Hall, or a lot of us my age, we think of that Bobby Orr picture. Of course, that's Glenn Annette there, and Bobby scoring that goal in overtime to win the cup. And I never really pieced together St. Louis, why they were playing Boston back then. The expansion teams used to play the original six teams back in the final back then.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so Boston ended up, their playoff went, they beat the Rangers, and then Chicago beat Detroit, and then Boston ended up beating Chicago to get to the final, and St. Louis beat Minnesota, and then Pittsburgh beat Oakland, and St. Louis beat Pittsburgh in their semifinal to end up playing the Bruins.
Yeah.
So that I didn't realize that's how they did it back then.
I didn't either. I guess I never got that far in hockey in those days to really know, but Boston didn't have a good team in those days, and usually you end up fifth or sixth in
Big
Six League, and just the way things were. But Glenn, when he went over to St. Louis, quite interesting to hear how it all happened and everything else. Well, it was good.
You know, I often think that if a person had a choice today to watch Chicago play Detroit against Gordie Howe, or Chicago play, you know, Boston in the day, and see those guys play today, currently, like as if they're 30 years old.
Yeah.
You know, the Makitas and the Hulls and the Bobby Hull, you know, and Glenn Hull.
Yeah.
And all these guys, you know, play Gordie Howe, or would you rather see a modern day team play?
Well, you know, I asked that of my friend J.C. Mignot. He's an ex-NHLer too. He played up there in the WHA and all that. And we were sitting one night having a sarsaparilla, and I just said to him, I says, watching a game, and I said, J.C., I said, if you could take that team out of Montreal, and he's a real Montreal fan, take that with Cournoyer and Richard and all those big-name guys they had, and if you could put them up against today's team right now, the Stanley Cup winners, how do you think they'd do? He says they'd get the shit kicked out of them.
Oh, the old guys.
The old guys.
Oh, well, it's...
Because they're 50. In such good shape now.
Sure.
And would just dominate. You may stay in for a period, but second, third period, you're going to lose it a little bit, and they're going to come on strong because they're in such good shape. And that's basically the difference of from that hockey to this hockey.
Well, it is, but I mean, who would you rather watch play? If you could go to a game in that arena playing Glenn Hall and Bobby Hall and Stan Mikita against Gordie Howe, Ted Lindsay, and everybody else, or you could go watch Edmonton play Calgary across the rink and the other one. Which rink are you going to go into and watch?
Well, I'm from the old school. I'd go to the old guys. Really?
Yeah.
Really.
Oh, yeah.
And I love the old guys.
They got the smaller protection. They got no helmets on.
Yeah.
They play a different...
No face mask.
They play a different game.
Yeah.
the atmosphere in the arena, which one do you think is better? Yeah. This one, they're all dressed up in suits.
Yeah.
And they're all out to have a good time.
Yeah, we looked at one picture with Glenn there. He showed us and he said, look at the kids over across the way with those boards. The glass wasn't all the way around. Yeah. And the kids, little kids sitting by the boards, had their hands hanging over the boards. He said, you have that in today's hockey and those hands would be cut off. Because it's just such a fast game now that they wouldn't be ready for it. And and the way they hit guys into the boards, there'd be guys going over top the boards all the time. And no, it was interesting to see that. I never thought of it until Glenn pointed it out and said that. And
I remember we asked him and said, how did you play 502 consecutive games? And that's what the record stands in the NHL there for. And he said, well, it's actually 522, I believe, because they didn't count the playoffs. But he said if he counted all of the games he played in a row, including the minors, including junior, he said it was 1,026 games in a row he played.
Yeah, it's quite a thing.
14 years of playing hockey almost.
I didn't think there's a man alive to be able to do that.
That's incredible.
I've gone through weekends playing three games and three nights, and that third game, I've lost probably 10 pounds from sweating so much. And when Monday morning come, you're just completely exasperated. You're just dead.
Oh, yes.
Dead tired. So, but I just can't imagine him being able to go through that and start every game. And schedule may have been better back because you only played, 72 games or something back in those days?
Yeah, 70, I believe.
70 games. Mm-hmm. So that was better. They would play play Saturday and Monday or Saturday, Wednesday or something, your days off. But still, it's hard to do, I'll tell you.
I think he said the schedule was like four games almost in a week. It was like Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, something like that. He said it was what the typical schedule was back in the day.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I look back to it and I get tired just talking about it. I mean, I think, oh my God, how can a man possibly do that? Because there's a lot of stress and strain with hockey. I mean, you got to get up for the games and you're on the throne all day. And he got sick before every game at night. So he's got nothing left in his body to play. But he goes out there and
does it.
Just said he loved the game, so so be it.
Yeah, that's right. I know the one question I thought was pretty interesting that I'd asked him, like, if you could play for anybody, and I was referring to any team, who would it be? And do you remember what he said?
Yeah. Scotty Bowman?
He said Scotty Bowman.
Yeah, yeah. He said he was a great coach.
He said he was the greatest coach he ever had.
Yeah.
He said he was so far ahead of his time. He was so good.
Yeah.
He was so good at getting the most out of every player, whether he had to crack the whip on somebody or pat him on the back, but he was so far ahead of his time.
Yeah.
And I think he coached a bit more of a defensive structure too, which he appreciated.
Yeah.
But I thought he would say Chicago or play here or I'd like to play there, but he said right away, just Scotty Bowman.
Well, Scotty was a hockey man. I mean, he really was. And he's still involved. He's still with Chicago, isn't he?
Yep.
He's
an advisor, I believe.
To his son, who's the general manager, isn't he?
That's right.
Yeah.
I heard that's where he was.
Yeah. That was good.
He was sharp.
Very sharp. I liked it too when we were talking. And we're sitting there and you were kind of talking to Glenn. He's telling you a story. And I got up out of my chair and I was going to go get him another beer. And he said, could you fill this one, my young fella? So he likes his beer too.
He's a Saskatchewan boy. In fact, you can tell he still loves Saskatchewan. He referred to it a few times, and I noticed he still gets the Humboldt paper.
Yep.
And how long has it been since he's been in Humboldt, but he still gets that. He knows what's going on, and he loves Saskatchewan and Saskatchewan people. He still obviously has that Sasky boy feel to him, for sure. He was your idol, and it was nice to get to meet him, and I never got to see him play, obviously. He just turned 87 years old. We talked a little bit about, Stan Mikita and that type of thing, because Stan passed away this summer, and he had mentioned he was his best man at a wedding, and that I found it interesting. He said, Stan is the first guy ever that he remembers that used to use behind the net as an offensive tactic.
Yeah.
He was just a genius, he said.
He was.
Yeah.
With that puck and stick.
Yeah.
He was, he could do miracles with that. But, I had Glenn for a coach in Edmonton that one year, and I really loved it. I mean, to me, that was the first year I ever had a coach, and he was great. When I in the dressing room in the old gardens there, I'd be sitting right by the door. So he would just come in and he'd say, move over. So between periods. And he'd set, if I had a goal scored on me, he'd kind of review the situation and saying, I think if you maybe had a focused here instead of focused there and you give him too much room or something, he would just pinpoint something out. And you can't believe how that helps when you're thinking about what you did wrong. You're not sure. But when somebody comes in that's played the amount that he's played, just says one thing about what you'd maybe try next time you do this. And I can just see where his game, when he played, he was pinpoint. He really was. And
he talked a little bit about, you know, making sure when he was a goalie, he's out high and being positioned and getting back to the post, which back in the day, they never, if you think about it, they think of Daryl Sittler's goal against Boston with the goalie kind of coming out to challenge him, but not get, obviously being able to get back to post, and Daryl goes around him and slides it in. That was quite common back then, whereas he adjusted and was the first one to really go, no, I got to be high and I'm getting back to my post to cover off that part of the net, which was, and of course he invented the butterfly, is what a lot of people say, you know, and quite the guy.
You know what I noticed about playing goal when I played, the goalies that play now, you don't see many scored on the angle because they're so big. They got so much padding on, their arms are so big, their pads are big, everything's to the max. They're just as max as they can get. Where back in our day, we had like nothing on in comparison. Like there's just a catching glove. And remember we seen Glenn's catching glove downstairs there?
Yeah.
It was like nothing.
Yeah.
It was just a wee little pocket on it. How he could catch anything of that thing, I have no idea.
I don't know.
But it was an old ball glove and he used that for years.
Yeah.
He said, this is my pride and joy.
Yeah, that's right.
And I looked at a picture of Detroit and he had it on that Detroit picture, and then I looked at one in Chicago and St. Louis and he had the same mitt. In those pictures.
Oh.
So, but the old blocker was different because they bought that, but I guess they offered to buy him a catching mitt. And he says, no, I like the one I got.
Yeah. That's
and he'd
great.
Get it restitched up and all that. And oh man. Yeah. It was just amazing.
Quite the thing. Yeah. It was great to talk to him and just get to talk some about the old days. And it was good.
I'm sure glad we went.
Well, we put an invitation out for him to come to the function that we're putting on next August.
Yeah.
You know, for a fundraiser here in town. So we've invited him.
Yeah.
And he sounds interested.
Yeah.
But of course, he hasn't committed yet. It's a long ways away, but hopefully it works out.
At his age, he can't really say yes or no because he doesn't know. But he's looking forward to coming to Saskatchewan. He loves it out Saskatchewan. He'd love to come home for it just to take part in all the episodes we're going to have at that function if he can make it. So if he can make it, that'd be great.
Arguably the greatest goalie of all time?
Absolutely. Who's better?
Yeah.
The only guy I can probably think of was maybe as good, but he wasn't nearly as acrobatic and had not nearly the stamina was Sawchuk.
Was Sawchuk, yeah.
They called him the acrobat, is what they called him, because legs would be flying, and he'd be getting hit. And like we talked about it too. Like I knew he was taller than me. I knew that.
Yeah, like I was surprised how big he was.
He's about an inch and a half taller than I am. So, and then, of course, now he's shrunk.
Yeah, sure.
He's getting shorter, but he's still taller than I am.
So. Yeah, he was probably, he was a lot bigger goaltender than I thought he was.
But, you know, what I really enjoyed was that, and I had seen it before, was that downstairs in his place. Now, you've seen mine. I haven't got nothing in comparison to what Glenn's got.
Yeah.
Nothing.
He was pretty proud of those Chicago MVP trophies he had because Bobby Hull was on the team and Stan Mikita, but he won the MVP of Chicago. And Bobby Hull, I think, won the MVP of the league, he had mentioned, but he was like, it was funny though, I was the MVP of our team.
Yeah, and it's something to be proud of. I mean,
sure, that was a great team.
He knew, I mean, you didn't put nothing past him that he didn't already have figured out. You can ask him a question of any kind. And he'd say, didn't you know the answer to that before? He said, I've been telling you that for years. You got to pay attention, Jack.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the way he is. He's just a sharp man.
I liked his confidence.
Yeah.
He was a confident person.
Very confident.
He believed that when there was a game that they had the advantage in goal.
Yeah.
So it was great. Yeah, I know. I appreciate you setting it up so we could get a chance to visit with him. That was awesome.
Well, he's an awesome person.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's from the old school and... When you have him for a friend, you got a friend for life.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. Yeah, that was good. So kind of leading into one of the stories that we're going to talk about here today, we're talking about the Chicago Blackhawks. And so when you were in Chicago, a lot of the old veterans, Glenn would know this story. I know Dennis Hull knows this story. And you and I got talking about it actually on our way home is about the games you guys like to play, especially at training camp. And this story is very... I can't believe how elaborate it was. So just tell the whole story about the snipe hunting in Chicago and how it all started and what you guys all did and everything to make it work.
Well, a lot of people listening know what snipes are. You know, that's a big bird in the springtime. They make nests around sloughs. If you're a farmer, you've heard this snipe, snipe, snipe. They get off their nest and they pretend that they got a broken wing and they will flutter away and want you to chase them and not bother the old girl on the nest. Or maybe it was the old girl doing it. But so in Chicago, I was there twice for training camp. And the first year, I heard rumbling going around the dressing room about this a snipe hunt. And I didn't say nothing. I'm a man of very few words when it comes to big stars like we had there. I mean, I don't say nothing. Anyway, I heard him talking about this snipe hunt, and I didn't ask any questions, so I wasn't a fish, you know, but I had some guys that did. And Ray McKay from Leduc, Alberta, he was one that said, well, what's a snipe hunt? He's not a farmer. He said, what's that? The guys would say, well, it's just a bird who you can catch, and you go into a cornfield or whatever, and you get a gunny sack and a light, and you crawl around, and you go, snipe, snipe, snipe. And they answer you, and they'll hear you, and they'll come right to you with that light. They're attracted to the light. So they come over, and you're supposed to catch them when you get them. So anyway, we had Paul Schmier and Ray McKay, they were set up. And all of us other guys went in cars to this cornfield, and we're all pushing this to get them doing this. And I kind of got clued in that this is not for real because I didn't know for sure. But then I thought, this doesn't sound too legit to me. I'd never heard of a snipe in a cornfield before.
Yeah.
So anyway, they did all that. So it's all set up. So these guys are out and it's just dark, just getting dark. And they're going around the cornfield, their hands and knees, calling these snipes amongst the corn. Then all of a sudden, who comes up? Big policeman. He comes in and he says to you, what are you guys doing? Well, we're snipe hunting. Well, don't you know it's out of season? You can't snipe hunt. This is out of season. You can't do that. You're in big trouble, buddy. So the guys get up and they say, well, I'm with the Hawks on a training camp, and I was told the snipes out here, and they're just crying. And so anyway, policeman, he cuffs them, takes them down to the police shop, uncuff them, they fingerprint them. This is phony, of course. They fingerprint them, think they're going to charge them, put them up on charges. So then these guys still said, well, we're with the Hawks. They said, who's the Hawks? What are you talking about? What Hawks? You mean the birds or what?
Yeah.
No, the Blackhawks. Never heard of them.
Yeah.
They just completely denied it. So anyway, they have a court.
They actually have a court.
Real courtroom. And we're all sitting in there and just, well, excuse the language, but pissing our pants laughing at all this happening. And judge comes in and asks these guys how they plead. And they says, well, we didn't know. We didn't know we're breaking the law. These guys said, he says, you guys are going to jail. You're going to jail for snipe hunting out of season. So they're going to sentence these guys to 2 years in jail. They're just dying. They're crying, I think. They were so upset that this happened. And all they said, well, look, all those guys in the court. Those guys are all our friends out there. They all play with the Hawks and da-da-da-da. So then the old judge, he finally broke down and smiled and says, aha, we got you. It was so funny. Yeah. Oh, these guys. I'd like to see Ray McKay now. He's about 6'6". He's from Leduc, Alberta. I've never seen him since that day, but I'd love to talk to him. Because Paul Schmier died a few years ago, but Ray McKay, as far as I know, is still alive, and I'd like to get his response.
What a great initiation activity if you think about, you know, all the things you could do to teammates and stuff, like so elaborate to actually, because they were real policemen and real judges and real courtrooms. They had it so set up.
They're all hockey fans, these guys.
Sure.
They all get free tickets from the Blackhawks and, you know, and then after it's all over, what do? We had a little party. It was a day off next day because it was Sunday. That was Saturday night.
Sure.
Sunday was next day and it was just a day off from training camp. So we didn't mind having a few beer, but the judge and the policeman were just laughing.
Oh.
And says, you, I could put you away for a long time.
I can't imagine. Like, that's such a great story. I can't believe that. And I'm sure that went on for probably a few different years, didn't it?
But a lot of these guys that did it in those days would be gone now, I'm
sure. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Well, Dennis Hull will be coming to our event next August.
Yeah.
And I know I've heard Dennis Hull tell the story before, and maybe for all the people that are going to be coming to this,
yeah,
they will know that this isn't made up. This actually happened, and Dennis will tell the story. Of course, Dennis tells it really funny because everything he tells is funny. Yeah. And just to kind of, how did this all start? But what a great initiation. What a great story to pull it off that far along, get these guys out digging around in a cornfield with a flashlight, to have the cops so show funny. Up.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and then actually take them to court and have a real judge show up in the real courtroom. And
when they handcuffed them and took their fingerprints, that's what really threw them off.
Oh, yeah.
He says, I'm going to be a criminal now.
Snipe hunting. That's great. That's awesome.
So after that, we'd go to Korean camp on Monday, and whoever's on the ice, like there'd be two or three, four different teams, and whoever's on the ice with Big Ray McKay, they'd be going, snipe, snipe. so funny.
Not a bad nickname to have if you're a hockey player, because you could always say you're a good shooter or something.
Yeah,
but that's awesome. Well, that was a great story there, Jackson. So I think we'll leave her at that from that point.
Yeah, that's good. That was good talking about all those things. I brought back a lot of memories.
That was an awesome story. I think people will enjoy that. So
I forgot a lot about that snipe hunt, but when you mentioned it to me, I kind of thought about it home a little bit, and then it kind of come back to me. And I was not one of the guys they got. I want you to know that. I didn't fall for it.
Well, like you said, they like to go after the guys that were maybe a little bit aggressive and a little bit cocky and kind of stuck their nose out a little bit.
And they did.
Kind of, and they did. So maybe being quiet and shy for the first month was a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's good. Okay, well, we'll leave her at that, and we'll talk to you next week.
You betcha.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Well, that ends episode 2 of season 2 of Jack Unmasked, where we learn more about the legend Glenn Hull and of the legendary snipe hunt of the Chicago Blackhawks. If you would like to be notified of each podcast that comes out every Friday, go to www.nccag.ca. Click on the podcast tab, enter your email, and you'll be notified of each podcast as they come out. Until we talk to you next week, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Going around the cornfield, their hands and knees, calling these snipes amongst the corn. And then all of a sudden, who comes up? Big policeman. Well, don't you know it's out of season? You're in big trouble, buddy. Cuffs them, takes them down to the police shop. Real courtroom. You're going to jail for snipe hunting out of season. So then the old judge, he finally broke down and smiled and says, aha, we got you. Snipe, snipe, snipe.